spot for her.
I know.
You guys put some Zoom on.
Yeah.
Chill, though.
Someone joined.
Yeah.
Test.
Rob, I saw a thumbs up. Does that mean you can hear us?
Dr. Brent was
coming. We're going to do a round around, so if anybody online can hear us, could you say hi? Okay.
Oh,
perfect.
Right, yeah. Down to the wire, we can blow it off.
All right, let's get the meeting kicked off. I wanted to start off by thanking Mr. Patrick for filling in with me for me last meeting when I was running Hotoka, so thank you, Jim, for that. I'm Dustin Capri. I'm the chair of the committee. Excited to see you all again and keep the lively discussion going. I don't know if we have anyone from the public here, but if we do, I want to remind everyone that we have an opportunity for public feedback at towards the end of the meeting at 3:50. So let's start with introductions. Mr. Baloney.
Rich Baloney, Lincoln County School District.
Christina Simonson, local business representative.
Lori Sanders, general public. Melanie Heim, lending institution.
John Fuller, Newport Communications.
Nina Better, city manager, city of Newport.
Eric Hammond, Newport Farmers Market.
Bob Berman, planning commission.
Jim Patrick, area resident.
Cynthia Jacoby, Newport City Council.
Wayne Patterson, the chamber.
I'm Brandy Steffen. I'm going to be helping facilitate the meeting today.
Jim Henke, I'm the consultant team project manager, and I'm with David Evans and Associates.
Hi, Derek Tokos, I'm the City Newport's Community Development Director.
All right. I think everyone had an opportunity to look at the material that was sent out.
Yeah, online.
Oh, up online. There. Sorry, I always forget about you all. Who wants to start first? We're just going to...
call him out.
All right, Dr. Breitenstein?
Yeah, Rob Breitenstein. I represent the hospital and health district in Samaritan Health System.
All right, I don't know everyone's name, so...
Hi, I'm Brett Estes. I'm the North Coast Regional Representative for the Department of Land, Conservation, and Development.
Kathy
Rissi,
City of Newport Grant Manager.
I'm Dennis White, and I'm sitting in for Reverend Judith Jones from St. Stephen's. We're getting a lot of echoes, by the way, from everybody but whoever's closest microphone.
I'm David Berniker with Earthworks. We're a subconsultant to DEA.
I'm Lee Pico with Echo Northwest, also a subconsultant to DEA. Nicole.
I'm Nicole Underwood with Echo Northwest as well.
Maybe just Ralph?
Oh, we got Dr. Breitenstein.
Okay.
Is it Tracy?
Hi, I'm Tracy Galbraith, and I'm with JLA, partnering with Brandy, who's facilitating the meeting today.
Okay. Got that. So, I like that. All right, I think we've done introductions now. So has everyone had a chance to review the materials, everything that was sent out this week and yesterday? Okay. How about the meeting minutes? Any edits or questions on the meeting minutes? Come on, Bob. You always have some comment on something.
I read every word and I couldn't find even a single typo.
Who's going to do that? Is that a compliment to Sherry? All right, there we go. Good.
Words do well done.
All right, can I?
I move we approve the minutes from the last meeting as presented.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Aye.
So, Brandy, I think we'll turn it over to you to get going.
Wonderful. Well, good to see you all again. And motion with your ears, online people, if you can't hear us, and I'll try to pay attention to that. So, we have a good agenda, hopefully some good conversations and questions with you all today. We're going to have Jim talk about the gap analysis document, and he'll talk a little bit more about what that means, because it's not the clothing store, so you'll get to learn more about what that is. And then he's going to also talk about how can we address those gaps. And then I will talk a little bit about our first round of outreach when we're going to go to the community, and that's going to be in November. So what is on the agenda, I realize, is inaccurate, so please don't advertise this information, but we do have a flyer that is correct, and so sorry about not fixing that. So we'll be out on Thursday, November 14th, and then we'll also be at the library on Friday the 15th. So we'll kind of try to meet people where they are and make it easy. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, and we have some draft questions, survey questions, that we'd like to review with you all and just make sure we're headed down the right direction, see if there's any concerns. So we'll go over that. And then just quickly touch on next steps, and if there are any public here who'd like to give public comments, we'll be saving those to the end because we really want to make sure that we are keeping this meeting for the committee. So, but we do have time at the end for those public comments, and then we'll get you out of here by 4. So I think, any questions, concerns? Okay. I know you all want to get back to the sunshine. It was lovely before we came in here. So I'm going to hand it over to you, Jim, and then we'll learn about the gaps analysis.
Great. Thanks, Brandy. Sherry, can you bring up the first slide? Or is that something you need
to do? You can connect with the Zoom.
Okay.
And I'll be taking notes today, so that's why I'm on my computer. Normally I like to just look at you all, but I'm going to take some notes too. So.
I'm pulling it up, getting connected now.
This is a great time to have some coffee, get some coffee. There's
drinks over there, too.
Cookies, sugar, keep you going.
Full stage in the center.
Yeah. Yes. I know.
Entertainment option.
Stanford?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Can everybody hear me? Can folks online hear me okay?
Great.
Cool. Welcome, everybody. I wanted to kick off this meeting. We're at our third advisory committee meeting. I think we've a total of 6, so right in the middle. And I wanted to kick this one off with a quick review of the end of the last meeting, which was the market trend analysis. And I'm going to have Emily and or Nicole online help me out with just revisiting these 3 slides quickly about what they're seeing related to market real estate information relevant to this project. So Emily or Nicole, can you jump in?
Yeah, I want to ground us in why we're looking at these really dense charts. We are about to look ahead as to what this district could become, both the US 101 corridor and the US 20 corridor. And market analysis work, Echo Northwest does this all the time. It looks backwards. So it looks at what has been happening with rents and vacancies over the last decade. And it can be helpful to do that, but it doesn't tell the whole story. But I'm going to give you a little picture of what's been happening over the last decade and kind of where you're sitting at and maybe why it feels like you haven't been able to attract a lot of development, because these charts can tell a bit of that story. So jumping right in, we collected some data on your office and retail market going back 10 years, showing that you have relatively low vacancies. You can probably look around town and see that. That points to that there's likely some unmet demand. There's businesses that would like located spaces and don't have that. But because the rents have not been increasing and it was so expensive to develop buildings, new retail and office buildings in Newport, you're not seeing any new development. And so that's restricting that stretch. Our project area has a pretty limited supply of move-in-ready buildings and a pretty limited supply of vacant commercial land, although later in the meeting you'll hear a little bit about some of the opportunities we did look at. If you go to the next slide, great. The housing market is a kind of similar story, although the rents have been increasing in Newport, and they're actually very high for what's happening in the community, so you're hearing a lot about that in the community as well, but that those increased rents that you've seen and the low vacancy is actually contributing a lot to how hard it is to do business in Newport and a business's ability to recruit and retain staff. And there are also not a lot of affordable homeownership opportunities for people that want to buy a home to live in long term and work in Newport. You're seeing those prices go up as well. So the reason why we're talking about this is that the city center area and US 20 is an important location for new housing development Newport. It would also provide housing that looks a little different from some of the other housing you have in the community. It could be housing that is more accessible by foot and transit. It could be things like condos, smaller condo buildings for people that don't have the means or don't want to maintain a larger home with a yard. So I think that's probably enough for me on those two trends. I think then the next slide is just talking about the barriers for development. Telling what some of those are. Don't need to start this meeting on a downer because I do think that we have a lot of really hopeful things to talk about today. But in both of our focus areas, we're seeing feasibility challenges related to financing and construction costs, and also just the additional costs of developing on the coast, and not only just the types of things you need on your building, but the additional cost of transporting goods and the additional cost of bringing in the labor that you need to build those buildings. You have market challenges related to the rents. Folks cannot afford the higher rents that you would need to justify new construction at this time, and the sales prices have really increased, and also that overall employment has decreased on the coast, likely somewhat interrelated with these housing challenges. You have aging buildings that are going to need a lot of new investment over the next 20 years, and already we're seeing some of those buildings reach the end of their usable life. You've got existing services for people experiencing homelessness that can sometimes contribute to feelings of discomfort, to negative perceptions of where of the properties around those. You have infrastructure that's aging or isn't really meeting the moment that we're at right now when it comes to utility infrastructure, but also roads. And then you've got existing buildings that are, existing businesses that if you do see a lot of new development, you risk displacing the existing businesses that have been there for a long time. So that's something that we really want to be cognizant of. Specific to Highway 101, highway safety, crossing that highway is kind of tricky as a pedestrian and walking along it as well. You've got coordination between with ODOT, between ODOT and the city and the Urban Renewal Agency that is all, I think, something we're trying to alleviate through processes like these, but it's an ongoing process. The lack of land and the need to assemble land. The retail environment along 101 is tricky because it has wanted to be a pedestrian environment, but with the high fast-moving traffic, it has been hard to operate retail businesses there, pedestrian-oriented businesses. On Highway 20, it's uncertain whether that would be a place that somebody would want to build housing in the near term, although we have identified some sites where that might make sense. And also there's incomplete pedestrian infrastructure, which is especially problematic because this area is close to the schools and is the place where people do need to walk in some cases. All right, Jim, I'll let you take it from here if anyone has questions, otherwise move on.
All right. Thanks, Emily. Just wanted to kick off with that review of kind of what the data is saying and a little bit of a reminder that this is a mix of technical analytic work with creative visioning work. And we're right in the middle of that. And the presentation today starts to show how we're taking some of what the data is telling us, but starting to work with it in a creative way, because vision becomes reality as long as you can connect it to things like funding and leadership and, you know, implementing actions. So that's what you're about to see, kind of what might be possible in City Center. And I'm gonna come back to that vision statement, because these five goals on this slide represent the consultant team looking at all the city policies and the studies and the things you've done to date and try to distill it down to, instead of it being like 1,000 pages long, if you were to summarize it, we think you want to see five things in the city center: an active mix of uses in a more walkable environment, number one. Number two, safe, efficient traffic flow and parking that makes sense and fits the area. Number three, a clean, welcoming appearance. And then number four and five are a bit related to implementation. Could include planned property development and acquisition, kind of thinking strategically about which parcels might we need to invest in. And then number five is similarly related, targeted investment in infrastructure should it be necessary to achieve the vision. Any questions about those five goals, kind of summarizing all the policies?
Well, there's no reference to housing here at all as a goal.
Good point, Bob. Mix of uses is an umbrella that I think housing fits under. If we need to be more clear, we can certainly amend this to include, you know, that word.
I think that's one of the top priorities if we're going to do this. So I'd like to see it be an enumerated item.
Okay. Well, I'll jump back to this vision slide, because this is Jim Henke trying to put in words a vision statement. And I'd love to get your feedback either today or after this meeting. You know, did I capture the essence of those goals and put it into something inspirational or compelling? And I'll just read it real quick. Newport's city center will become an active, walkable, mixed-use environment with a clean, welcoming appearance. Circulation will be safe and efficient, supported by improved traffic flow, managed parking, and enhanced bicycle and pedestrian facilities. Vibrant streetscapes will support local businesses, business activity, and entice both residents and visitors. Redevelopment will be facilitated by strategic investment and infrastructure, planned property acquisition, and streamlined development approvals. So you can see how they connect to those goals. Maybe we add the word housing more specifically into this vision statement. Any questions, or should I keep rolling?
What do you mean by streamlined development approvals? Is that shortcutting the normal processes within the city?
Not shortcutting, just making sure that, you know, working with all of you, is there anything we might do to just make sure developers don't feel like you have an onerous process, that you have kind of the right checks and balances about the, you know, making an application, having it reviewed, making sure the criteria fit. So it's clear and objective and predictable.
Okay.
Would the use of this vision statement be for community, or is this really for the committee in terms of guiding policy decisions?
Good question. I think it's for everybody, and I'm sort of, in my mind, being the project manager, I'm thinking about this final document. We're going to hand you a plan, and I can see how this vision statement will be very early in the document, where you turn the page, and what are we trying to do with this plan? You know, well, this is what, if you were to write it down in a paragraph, this is what we're trying to do.
Okay, that's helpful. I appreciate that context. I'm obviously new to this. It feels like you have incorporated a lot of the components that this committee has talked about. I work in government, so I will say there's a lot of words that I'm familiar with because they are kind of a lot of government terminology. And if we want to use this with community, I'm just wondering if we should think about the words that we're using, because people might not understand what circulation means. Those aren't words that people use every day. So I think something to think about in terms of if you want to use this in community as like, let's get around this vision. We're in this together and we understand what we're trying to do here. We might want to think about the word choices.
Great point. I think the simpler the better if we can get there. Mm-hmm. I'll keep going. We can come back to this. I included this sketch. This was something working with the consultant team at HerbsWorks, our urban designer specialist. It's very loose, and it's not meant to, you know, survive the process necessarily that we're going through. I think we'll refine it as we move along. But it's just this idea that we are creatively approaching this, thinking about what anchors the north and the south end of the study area, how do they relate to the adjacent neighborhoods. So visually, I like this sketch because we're still in a process of developing these ideas.
Can we go back to the sketch?
Sure.
So in the first meeting, I talked about how I always feel like it should go all the way down to the bridge. I know that this is going to be refined later, but I think it's interesting, this sketch that the urban designer pointed out, like the south anchor and the north anchor, but our study area doesn't include the south anchor. And I think like this will come down to actual building design at the time, and I don't know how constrained we are with the actual area that can be developed. And I understand by the hospital, there's a limited amount of value in urban renewal because it's already developed. But I think there's such a natural break at that point. Mm-hmm. And so that's just something that, for the record, I want to say. It's not needing to be further developed at this point. But
yeah, that's a great reminder, Dustin. I think, you know, the bridge is the ultimate termination of this, you know, the peninsula as it hits the bay. But as you describe, that's one part. The other part is the hospital itself. And I think drawing a bubble around it is just trying to capture some of those ideas you just mentioned about we want to recognize that there's some pretty good things anchoring the south end, actually. You could also look at the 101 corridor and say, well, it could be improved and there could be, there's a wide right-of-way, et cetera. So how can we make it better?
Yeah, I think that up. It comes down to the two options too, right? If it becomes a couplet, or if it doesn't become a couplet, then it doesn't matter anymore, right? But if it becomes a couplet, right at that point is actually where 9th Street takes off, or in theory does. So if you are, it just feels so natural to have it happen there.
I agree.
Yeah. How many of us actually drive that? Because I know that's my back road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of choice. Coming off the bridge. Yeah.
So anyway, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's great feedback.
It's when I saw the sketch, I was like, yes, this sketch is saying exactly what I wanted to say.
Thank you. And you can thank David Berneker, who's on the line. He was the wielder of the markers. So thanks, David. I'll keep going. And some of those ideas about that anchor will, think about that when we're looking at some of these diagrams coming up. So like I said, it's analytic. It's technical, it's creative, and there's also these standards we have to apply and meet. And a big player is ODOT, and fortunately, ODOT's, for a transportation agency, somewhat visionary and progressive in that they have this thing called the Blueprint for Urban Design, and they recognize that a highway can change how it performs and how its design should reflect the context. And context can really change over the length of a facility. So you're in city center, and that context is very different than where 101 is running along the beach and there's no development. So there's some unique things that they recommend, and they have some flexibility, which is really wonderful for us urban designers. And then in addition to ODOT's Blueprint for Urban Design, HerbsWorks and their form-based code expertise is kind of bringing in best practices. And we've included a couple of their diagrams that they've used on some other projects. And it's how buildings relate to adjacent streets is really important. And so as we develop this plan, thinking about which buildings are commercial and have a retail ground floor should be treated differently than residential buildings, and how they're treated at the ground floor. And you can see here, one example is typically residential buildings benefit from a little bit of a setback from the right-of-way, whereas it's better to have commercial buildings kind of tightly up against the sidewalk. And that's just general best practice. So these are things we're starting to bring to the conversation. So we've been developing lots of diagrams and thinking about all the many factors. And I mentioned the ODOT context. They have something called Central Business District, and that fits very nicely over the 101 corridor, sort of between 20 and the bridge to the south. But then the 20 corridor is something they call urban mix, and they're very similar when you look at the policy document, the blueprint for urban design, but there is some subtle differences. Just wanted to point that out. And then the topography here is really interesting. You know, this peninsula, city center is up on a bluff. There are some high points and low points. It's not all like an even ridge line. I was walking around before the meeting today, and it dips down and it rises up, and there's pockets of existing trees. It's really interesting, and there's a lot of really good things you can build on, the views, etc. So we're looking at that as we, and the current destinations, like where City Hall and the library and the courthouse and the rec center, etc. So physical analysis, and then circling back to ECO's market real estate analysis, we've gone ahead and tried to take a first cut at putting down on paper some of the parcels we think might represent more near-term types of redevelopment opportunities. And I know this is probably something of a tricky, dangerous conversation to have, because, you know, if you own a business and there's like one of these blue shades on it saying, hey, you might redevelop, well, we want to talk about it with you, and so we got to start somewhere. Emily or Nicole, do you want to, you know, jump in and talk about kind of what went into the analysis for this diagram?
Yeah, I just want to get some background as to why we did this. Part of this gap analysis task is to understand some different redevelopment scenarios over the next 20 years that respond to the potential public realm improvements we're talking about. So we're looking at kind of a low, medium, high approach. So what this map is I think a representation of like maximum development, which I don't think you're going to have a scenario where you see development on all these parcels, or maybe even half of these parcels, or a quarter of these parcels. But it's just trying to understand like what, if you have development in this area, where could it possibly go? And to determine these parcels, we looked at a number of factors. We looked at assessor data related to the value of building improvements compared to the value of the land. And typically, if you have if the land is worth more than the building that sits on it, that's typically seen as a parcel that may be a candidate for redevelopment over a longer period of time. Vacant land also plays in. There's a couple of vacant parcels that are called out here. We looked at public ownership. The agency has been, Urban Renewal Agency has been buying land over the last few years and has really been trying to partner to, especially those buildings that are reaching their end of life, which are uninhabitable for whatever reason. They are an important partner there. And then we also just were looking at some bigger sites that could accommodate projects at the size that some developers would want to develop. So, like this triangle site that's kind of right in the middle of the 101 corridor, like potential sites that could accommodate, a couple dozen apartment units, for example, because a lot of developers are not super interested in this very small scale type of project. So I think that's about what went in. Nicole, am I missing anything from your memory?
No, I think you covered it.
Okay, any questions before we move on? This is just the consultant team trying to wrap their head around where do we think some things might change in the foreseeable future. Bob?
Yeah, I see that both north and south of the Armory is represented as possible public redevelopment, but the Armory itself is not. I've been advocating since the start of this whole thing that somebody talk to the National Guard and say, wouldn't you be better off on the other side of the bridge where the airport is? And Derek had, I think, some preliminary conversations, and they were not interested. But I think it should be pursued to some extent because that's a wonderful piece of land. And how we're going to even potentially redevelop, I mean, I guess I don't know how much of that land is belongs to the National Guard, and you have a yellow, some yellow on one side, some more yellow on the other side. But if it's National Guard land, it all needs to be treated as one. So I don't know, and Derek maybe can comment further.
Now, the city has approached the state on the armory a number of times, and they have, you know, about potentially moving over to the south side of the bridge and over to the airport, you know, to be some synergy with the municipal airport. But they have indicated that up to this point, and that things can always change, that they aren't interested in that. And they have been investing in renovating the armory. So they are investing in that facility. And what you'll find in, outside of the armory, but you look at a number of the properties that have been flagged by Eco Northwest, these are many of them are buildings that have not seen investment, not meaningful investment in a long time. And it's
okay, so that entire chunk all the way up to Pink and Pancake doesn't belong to the to the state?
You mean in terms of the parking lot?
Yeah, the parking lot on that side. And I don't know what's on the other side. I never noticed. But
I do think the parking lot's part of that, but I'd have to double check that.
Yes. Well, we can, you know, I think there's things about this diagram probably that do need to change, but this, again, it's a quick kind of analysis to say, well, let's start thinking about these ripe fruit that might be picked and what might happen there.
Other questions or
David
Nelson has
his hand up.
What
would
you want to say?
David.
Hi, David. I was in Newport recently for the Oregon Coast Jazz Party, and which was fabulous, by the way. And I noticed that the building next to the Kite Store on 101 had been torn down, and wondered what's happening there.
Yeah, that building was acquired by the Newport Urban Renewal Agency. There was an opportunity to acquire it. That building had been vacant since at least 2016. Was in a very poor state. It had been broken into a number of times. It had a skylight that was broken out, so you had a lot of water intrusion in a portion of the building. Really kind of holding things back. And so the agency purchased it for the purpose of demolishing the building. And we've done that. And we haven't taken the foundation out because for a number of reasons. There are no immediate plans for that property. Thought is that that property could be compiled or put together with others for redevelopment in the future. But again, it was an acquisition of opportunity for the agency.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, there are dozens of properties that could be added to this too. You know, there's a lot of dilapidated and just structures within a poor shape. So
you just color the whole thing blue and yellow.
All right. Well,
it's just potential, right? Potential everywhere.
Help the white slate. Well, yeah, we want to keep working with you on it. We understand, you know. Some things, I'm sure, like City Hall, and, you know, we just don't want to assume those are going away, but there's other areas that definitely look like they're more opportune, and this starts to speak to that. So moving into the alternatives, and we are taking what the prior transportation system plan recommended, and it kind of put out there and said, well, we think a couplet is a good idea, especially the short couplet. But, you know, you could potentially keep Highway 101 two-way, and they had some recommendations about that. So we're trying to dive in a little deeper on those two ideas and flesh them out, adding in this additional bit focused on land use opportunity and sort of further design refinement. So number one is the idea of the two-way Highway 101, but there's a companion piece to that, and that is putting bike lanes on 9th. So very diagrammatically, this, what you see on your screen, is zooming in on that development opportunity diagram, adding in a focus on the transportation alternative and a little more context about specific parcels. And you can see we've flagged where the emergency shelter by, what is that, 7th and Herbert, and the other provider down there on Canyon Way, the Agape Center, and starting to just show it in a very diagrammatic way, like, okay, this is what that idea looks like. There's the purple highlights some important cross streets that get you sort of from the oceanfront and Nye Beach area connected to the bayfront. And then a real quick pass drawing how redevelopment might look and feel, you know, big blocky type redevelopment buildings shown on those sites. And then a little more nuance about how the street is drawn, because you can see there's a little extra line work on 9th, and those are those two bike lanes that the transportation system plan is recommending. And then the north end, where it hits City Hall, is, you know, kind of a unique feature between the two elements. And the light green is where your farmer's market is today. So we wanted to highlight in this scheme, it kind of looks like the farmer's market could stay. But, you know, more to the story, here's sections of that alternative. I want to call your attention to the top section is 101, right downtown, and the second section below is 9th. Notice that it's two lanes in each direction, and there's no on-street parking. So that's a change from today. That on, you know, businesses tend to like to have on-street parking right out front, but in this scenario, it goes away. You do gain a little bit of a buffer to the pedestrian area, that 4-foot buffer zone you can see there, and, you know, we showed some trees and some street lights. It could be enhanced, but it still maintains a 9-foot sidewalk, which for a city center is a little tight given the volume of traffic on Highway 101. If you look at 9th, you can see there's on-street bike lanes, one heading north, one heading south, and there's a lane of traffic, you know, in each direction. 5-foot sidewalks, pretty narrow, but a little bit of a buffer zone makes it nicer. So this is, I think there were sections in the transportation system plan, but they were so cartoony. I think this helps. I hope it helps all of us visualize it in more detail.
So
there's a couple questions.
Yeah.
Well, on section A, there's not a left turn lane there anywhere in that zone?
It's so constrained that I think, I mean, this is still early days, like it's not a fully designed corridor. Would there be the ability to create a left turn lane?
Yes.
And on your blueprint for urban design, there's a left turn lane, you know,
and that's a very wide example. Like, you'll notice the width is much wider in that.
Right.
That's something we just cut and paste that they had already drawn of a wider corridor. So it's so tight that I think getting a left turn lane, I'm not sure it's possible.
And adding all the green spaces and wider sidewalks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob, did you have a question? Okay. Anybody else have questions?
And Angela Rogie, are you online?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so Angela works at David Evans, and she's one of our transportation planning experts. I don't know, Angela, if you have anything you want to add to this alternative or turn lanes in this constrained environment, is there anything else you want to add to that?
I think you covered it. If you were to have turn lanes, it would be at the expense of probably the buffer zone and shoulder and sidewalk.
Well, not sidewalks.
Okay, because it's, we're not, you know, it's kind of like hard to design thing. I know the details matter, and we're trying to walk that line between enough detail, but still kind of at a planning level. Melanie, were you going to say something?
Well, is it really just for like three blocks, because that's where it's tight, is the three blocks here, and then it widens back out, so kind of would it shift like that, how it currently
yeah.
shifts?
Great point. The most constrained part is, what is that? The Pig and Pancake Street is agate?
Alder.
Alder? Okay.
Yeah.
And then to about City Hall. Yeah, that's the most constrained piece of the corridor. And heading south of there, I think it does widen a bit, and there might be more opportunity to do some more things. Then what we're showing here is kind of like the worst case scenario.
Just where it's currently tight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll keep going. We can always come back. And then one last bit of this is, this diagram was thinking about the bike network and that sort of blue-green color. There's some existing bike routes that are already identified in your plans today, but the connection from the bridge sort of up Highway 101 and then on the 9th, and then you get up to City Hall and you have to decide where do I go from here, and then we're suggesting that you might make a right, if you want to keep going north on the 10th, and then head up Benton, or perhaps, what was that other street, Derek, one block over?
Well, I'll probably just stick with Benton for now.
Benton,
I was wondering if you could run a cursor over this, because I think it's pretty important. We have no functional cycling amenities through this part of town, and spotty pedestrian amenities, frankly. And if we're to make any major change to the highway system, we need to find a way to improve those modes. And so, and both alternatives can do that to a point, but part of this too is looking at, okay, how do we tie into the rest of the city? So it's not just an isolated set of improvements. And, you know, with respect to US 20, what they're showing there is, as you're coming in from Corvallis, I'm just going to kind of run it from that direction. Once you hit the intersection with Moore and 20, cyclists would be diverted over to First. Okay, so they wouldn't run down the US 20 corridor. Future that and our transportation plan, you know, when we redo US 20, does not have bike facilities on it because we know they'd be going on First, which would then give us some ability to widen out sidewalks on 20 when that work is done in the future, because we do have room to do that on 20 to provide a little bit more separation from US 20 traffic and those that are walking. Now you go westbound on First, you get to Benton, and that's where you would be going south, and there would need to be some sort of rapid flashing beacon or some sort of protected crossing at Benton. Then the cyclists would be brought down Benton to 10th, and then they loop around, and then you've got 9th. And whether or not it's 9th and 101, without the couplet or the short couplet, you would be extending your cycling down. For 9th, you could take it all the way to Bailey, where we have a rapid flashing beacon, where cyclists would be brought across to the west side of 101, and then they would go down to the bridge from there along the west side of 101. The advantage we have, as we've been talking about, once we get south of Alder, is we pick up right away on 101, so we have some more flexibility to add some of that in. Even if we're going to be routing cyclists down 101 down in that area, we have the ability to put in some separated bike lanes so that you're not tight to a travel lane, where folks often feel that's very uncomfortable to be cycling when you're that close to particularly high volumes of traffic. And so trying to spend some time here to figure out how do we make that work both for cyclists and pedestrians, and that's kind of our thinking right now. Want to do everything we can to avoid US 20 and 101 intersection. That's not an area where we want to direct cyclists and pedestrians if we can avoid it.
All right. Should we keep moving? Alternative two. This is the couplet. And same set of diagrams, but modified to reflect the couplet scenario. You can see the dashed line roughly identifies, something of an alignment where it connects close to Abbey on the south end, and then it comes up by angle and would have to make its way and merge back into 101 because it's 9th Street heading north, and Highway 101 would become south only between Angle and Abbey. So that's a big change. There is kind of pros and cons to that change. We kind of started sketching to get a sense of how this might fit in between the buildings and where the bike lanes could fit in. And Derek and I had a conversation about that angle merge where the couplet at the north end comes back in. And as he mentioned, if we're having bikes on 10th heading north and south, then how would they get over to the north side of 101 so they can head south? And we did a quick little diagram. You can see the line work in red. And, I think we're on we can make it work. But it shows kind of how the routing might be threaded through there.
With the parking lot where the farmer's market is, where that falls in, is the size is actually probably comparable, right? Because you're gaining as you move to the north and east.
So we just did a quick sketch, and in this version of the sketch, we took a little bite out of the parking lot to make it happen. I think we could keep working with the design idea to minimize how much it might impact that existing parking lot. So will there be no impact? There'll probably be at least a little. And could there be a bigger impact? Sure, but I think we're trying to avoid that.
To follow up on Eric's comment, so in this scenario, I'm not that familiar with couplets, but there is no need for a protected turn lane, right? You're always just going in one route and you're taking a left or a right. Is that right?
Run that question by me.
Sorry, in a couplet, when you're going on the one way, there's two lanes and you're either taking a left or a right, so there is no need for protected turn lanes. You gain that space.
I think the answer is yes, but Angela, you want to weigh in?
I need it to be repeated. I didn't hear that very well.
You don't need a protected turn lane on a one-way couplet, right?
So, let me see if I can rephrase it. So, Angela, yes. If someone was heading north on 9th Street and they wanted to turn left onto,
Herbert.
Yeah. then would right. they need to have a protected left turn lane, or would it just be part of the normal travel lane?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are design features that for bicyclists, that's what we're talking about, correct?
No, I was talking about for vehicles, just highlighting what Eric's comment was.
Just straight vehicular traffic, Angela. Like, you're driving up 9th and you want to go left on Herbert, do you need a protected lane, or you just turn from your travel lane?
You can just turn from your travel lane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kathy Rigby has her hand up.
Kathy Rigby.
Yeah, I just had a question for either alternative, and this is maybe an ODOT question, but if you increase the amount of people in this area, either because we redevelop commercial space or we have residents living there, is there a possibility for increased traffic signals rather than just pedestrian flashing beacons to sort of create less opportunity for accidents and more opportunity for pedestrians to use the space and feel safe, regardless of the option? Bicyclists, I also assume, would prefer that.
If I understand,
the three traffic signals and where it goes through a town, you see lots of places on 101 where it goes through a town, that increasing traffic signals just sort of forces people to be more careful. And if we're putting commercial in there, we're hoping people stop and stay, just increasing the level of opportunity for people to slow down and stop might be beneficial. zone. Has that been considered?
David, do you want me to jump in, or do you want to answer that for ODOT, from ODOT's perspective?
Yeah, I'm happy to respond. My name is David Helta, and I work with the Transportation Growth Management Program at ODOT. And so I'm familiar with this issue. And it's funny that you mentioned that because I was just wondering the same thing and wanting to look at the city transportation system plan to see whether or not signals have been evaluated on this portion of section 101. In general, we're restrictive about where we put signals because we get so many requests that if we put a signal in everywhere people request it, then there would be way too many. So we have a standard that has to be met called a traffic signal warrant. So there has to be enough traffic volume and enough turns being made to justify a signal, and then we would be willing to consider it. In looking at the map that the consultants have drawn as kind of the east-west connection across town, in terms of providing connectivity between the neighborhoods and also improving the connection between this area and the bayfront, it does seem like a signal at Abbey might be beneficial for that reason. That's one of the major cross streets. I'm not sure if conditions are getting to be met for the signal at that location. Or any other locations in the time frame. So, again, if somebody's on top of what was done in the TSP, that would be helpful to know whether or not it has been considered there. And if not, or if it's an issue that ought to be considered as part of a developing couple, or even not a recommendation that we can include in this plan.
Angela, you would probably incorporate, excuse me, bulb outs at the sidewalks, right? So that way the distance that you're actually crossing is less.
Yeah, so we need to be evaluated. I guess the short answer is the signals haven't been evaluated yet with the revised land use and traffic configuration, but for state facilities. And I apologize if I missed the question. I'm having a hard time hearing folks in the room. But the ODOT standard practice is to do an intersection control evaluation to determine the correct, you know, should it be a roundabout, should it be a stop sign, how many lanes do you need? So that's all part of kind of the design process.
And I think was the question about putting
bulb outs
to reduce the travel length. Yeah.
You probably use
bulb outs. Are a feasible option.
Okay. I mean, I think that's a big thing. I'm running in this area every single morning, and I'm running, 40 to 45 feet across the road, versus if you have bulb outs, then, like, suddenly you're running, 20 feet across the road?
Mm-hmm.
And people can see you a lot better, too, so.
Dustin, that's a great...
Yeah, sorry. I couldn't hear you so well. Yes, the bulb outs are definitely a feature that can help narrow up the road, as long as you're providing the through capacity that's needed for the vehicle.
They also slow down traffic, right? So people are moving slower.
They're a great traffic calming feature.
And Dustin, I'm going to use that as a segue to the unique sections for the couplet. Because on 101, the big difference between the two-way 101 versus the one-way couplet 101 is you can see on this drawing, there's 8-foot on-street parking along both sides. And that's the perfect location for where curb extensions or bulb outs at the intersections can narrow the crossing distance. Because, you know, as you approach an intersection, the parking, it doesn't go right up to the end, it stops. And that's where you can then bring the curb out closer to the travel lane, have a little more pedestrian space. It's sort of safer for everybody. And, you know, to your point, it's a shorter crossing distance than you're only crossing 22 feet approximately instead of, I don't know how far those curbs are today, but it's more than 22 feet. So you can see the two lanes south on this section, the parking, you've got a bike lane heading south on one side, and it's a protected bike lane, which cyclists tend to prefer, not just right there with traffic. You still have 4 feet for furnishings and landscaping potentially, and there's even an extra foot to add to the pedestrian zone. So this is a much more generous section for pedestrians and bicyclists in the consultant's opinion. And I think from a traffic operations perspective, it operates well at smooth flow of traffic. On 9th, it's two lanes northbound and a protected bike lane again. So pretty good for traffic flow, good for bicyclists heading north. No parking on 9th. So there is some parking, on-street parking lost on 9th. That's one of these trade-offs. But still a pretty nice, generous section from a pedestrian point of view. You have some landscape and buffering possibilities. And then this diagram is very similar to the 101, except you can see we've got that blue-green southbound bike lane goes right through city center, whereas on the other diagram, it was all shifted over to 9th. So the bike lane and the vehicular traffic splits. That's the whole way a couplet functions. And then we need to make a decision of, do the bikes just all get onto 10th or do they stay on 101? And my sense is most people would say, let's get them over to 10th and not keep them on 101. But we just wanted to show that we're looking at that and flagging where those existing rapid flashing beacons are, where there's current existing traffic signals are, and where a future potential flashing beacon might be across the Highway 20 corridor. So I've been talking about parking, and it's usually one of the hottest topics in this type of planning exercise. Back in 2018, the city did a parking management plan, and so the good news is they had some pretty good inventory information about existing on-street parking. So we took that diagram, but we noticed since 2018 and today, 9th had some additional on-street parking added. So in green, we added those numbers to our inventories, and we wanted to show, or at least from a quick planning level analysis, what the impact is on on-street parking. The two-way Highway 101 option, alternative number one, gets rid of all the on-street parking in city center. That's the short story. No on-street parking in city center. The couplet keeps it on 101, but gets rid of it on 9th. When you add it all up, because parking kind of can function as a district. It's not like you have to have it right in front of your business, although most businesses prefer having it in front of their business. In this area today, you've got about 450-ish. In the couplet, it goes down to 432 if you only change the streets and don't do anything else in terms of off-street parking. But the two-way, alternative number one, it goes all the way down to about 370 approximately. So you can see there is a difference between the alternatives about the number of on-street spaces. So thinking about implementation, we could either jump to that and then just open things up to discussion for a little bit, or we could talk about the alternatives right now if you have questions about the differences between before we move on.
Yeah. Any questions?
Kathy Rigby's got her hand up.
Kathy, and then Commissioner. Thank you.
Does this either alternative consider adding parking to any of the cross streets that have that are wider? I think there's Herbert and a couple others that have on-street parking, but it's limited. If you created like a median with angled parking, that might increase the number of parking spots. Does either alternative consider adding parking in to one of the off-streets?
Not yet. We haven't really explored that beyond the fact that the couplet, you would lose some existing on-street parking on angle. And what is that street down there to the south? The south end where 9th comes back and kind of meets 101, there's a cross street.
Bay.
Yeah, so there's some on-street parking at Bay that could be impacted by, you know, realigning 9th to join smoothly into 101. The other option, let me get to it, less impact to the existing cross street parking. So your question, though, was could we squeeze some more in there? We haven't really studied that. We just sort of assumed that it stayed pretty much the same.
One thing really important to me is to have some kind of area with a public plaza, and I don't know if it could be combined with the farmer's market or not. I don't see any really place on here that you've marked for that yet, and I know it's early to decide, but I just want to put in a word for that.
Understood, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for that.
Okay.
And on the couplet, I think at each end there's an opportunity in terms of the island where the traffic splits. There could be some kind of feature there. But then within the blocks, any of these opportunity sites, I think, you know, represent a open space opportunity as well as a development opportunity.
To Cynthia's point, couldn't you close Lee Street? It's sort of a very underutilized street right now, anyway.
Which street?
Lee.
That would eliminate a lot of parking as well, though.
Because
that's a lot of parking that people use.
You know, another option, and this was discussed with TSP, is you could take something like V and set it up so that it can be closed for special days. And have it set up something like that.
Kathy, you have your hand up again.
So another, only because I come from a city that did this, so if you increase parking on the side streets, you can also close those streets for events. So you can block them off and create that public space to post tents and things up for a marketplace. And if you did like continuous sections, you could have a longer opportunity to have a walkable area of shopping for the time when you did this event space. So I just wondered if we added that to the consideration of the side streets and parking, and then also being that public access when closed for a limited amount of time, that doesn't solve a problem.
I think it's a great idea, and I think we can definitely explore how it fits in. I noticed I walked around again today just to get, you know, further understanding, and I noticed how flat Alder is between 101 and 9th. It's pretty level, whereas Herbert is, you know, pretty steep. And I didn't get a sense of Lee, but I think it's a little bit.
It's a little bit better
than Herbert, but not as flat as Alder, which I was imagining Alder. Like, well, if he closed that could be a location for either events or maybe the farmer's market. You set it up, you take it down.
It's a lot more fun to set up a booth on a flat surface.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. maybe play around with a few locations where the closure of the street might fit well, and if, are there other options, and a little more emphasis on that kind of plaza public space element.
Deliverable-wise, too, the, I mean, you're not going to be getting into full street design, right? So you could just include it as sort of an idea, right?
Yeah.
It's something to consider at a later point.
Exactly. We're not, we can't deliver you final design street plans. This is going to be more of a higher level diagrammatic type of deliverable at the end.
Is there anything to be gained by considering angle parking as opposed to parallel? I mean, you must be able to fit more cars in, but it's a wider area.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of angled parking on those side streets today, and the great news is more cars fit in that condition. It's tough to do angled parking where it's steep. The answer is, I would say, yes, let's try to fit it in everywhere we can because of the benefit of more, you get more. But it has to have the width and the grading and things to work.
It does get a little tricky. You know by Depot Bay when you're going through downtown? Like, I always feel like it's so hard to back out of that, though. You sit there and you, like, keep your brake light on and you have to wait, and then you, like, think you can go, and then suddenly someone's flying by.
Especially get pinched in there by a truck or something.
You need to get a big pickup and just go. Yeah, I can see. I just go through really fast. In regards to the couplet and traffic lights, there's a light right now at Herbert and 101. Wouldn't there have to be one at Herbert Canyon Way and 9th if the couplet went through there?
Yes.
To be determined.
Yeah, I mean, when you do something like the couplet and you're dealing with one-way traffic, they would take a fresh look at signal placement as part of that whole concept. They haven't gotten that far in the discussion. What David Helton had mentioned earlier is that Abbey over by the hospital might be a candidate for signalization. But again, they haven't really dug into that.
So they might lose the light at Herbert and 101?
They would have to kind of take a look at how that works, and it would function differently. And whether
it's the worst light in town.
Yeah.
Get stuck there in the middle of the night.
Hey, Angela. Just generally, I know some couplets I've seen around. It seems like there's a lot of signals on couplets, and they all get time to function in a way that works together. But do you have any thoughts about sort of signalizing and couplets in a general planning sense?
Yeah, I think that there's trade-offs to signals. They can provide a protected stop crossing for pedestrians to cross if the traffic's busy. The benefit of going from two-way to couplet is, you know, before where you were crossing four lanes of traffic, now you'd be crossing two and only from one direction. So there may not be as much of a need for it, but yeah, coordinated traffic signal system through a couplet is pretty standard.
Okay, Jen?
I had a question about how you would run the parade with a couplet. Just curious. Because I know how that works. Traffic works when we have a parade. You lose your way to do it.
No, it stops at 20.
Right. Yeah. You can do 9-2-way or something.
It stops at 20 right now. It doesn't come down. Yeah, go to the farmer's
market. Down here.
Yeah. Right now it turns to 20, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't go any. Yeah. It doesn't go past 20 anymore.
So
it used to.
It sounds like that's a good question to consider. I'm not sure if we have that answer.
I don't think we have the answer to that question today.
I'm sure there's a way to solve it.
Good
question, Jim. Keeping us on our toes. Any other questions?
Okay. I've pointed out what I believe are some of the significant differences. we have the beginnings of like some of the main approaches to implementation in the next couple of slides, and it's tailored a little bit to 101, and then the next slide talks about 20, and we could cover those quickly. Emily or Nicole, do you want to take on these next two slides?
I can talk a little bit about it, Jim, and I know that Emily spoke with you as well. And so if I'm missing anything, please feel free to jump in as well. So just some initial considerations as we're thinking about implementation here. We did structure these around goals, like Jim said, for these different areas, build up some of those pieces that we discussed in the market analysis last time as well. And so for US 101, the overall goal that we're looking toward is creating a focal downtown core. And we heard, you know, like other cities and with different flavors, similar to what you have in 9 Beach or South Beach, like what can make this area unique? And what are some of the initial considerations and objectives to doing so? And so, you know, the first objective being supporting and expanding local business districts along US 101. And there are a number of different considerations and initiatives we could take to do that. Developing branding, I know that came up in the last CAC meeting as well, and then needing additional amenities to make this more of a place. So playgrounds, plazas, public art, wayfinding, those kind of things. We'll be looking at different ways to, explore tenant and storefront improvement programs. That's a key part of this project as well. We just talked about the potential for a farmer's market. Where will that locate? So these are some of the initial considerations that will be included in the implementation plan. Housing development being a key one as well. And then the different streetscape enhancements that you might have and what some of those different funding mechanisms will look like. As a part of this plan, we'll also be thinking about the phasing and what does this look like with a combination for funding road improvements and the phasing for these different elements. Jim, is there anything else you want me to talk about here?
No, I think we should kind of keep moving. We just wanted to hit on the highlights because where we're trying to get to, I believe, is a recommendation from this committee about what's the preferred alternative so that we can kind of dig in a little deeper and tailor the implementation strategy to the preferred alternative. There's some things that I think fit either alternative that we can recommend and develop, but some things are unique and specific to one versus the other. So why don't you talk, again, quickly about US Highway 20, and then we can wrap up this piece of the agenda because I think we need to get to conversation around the outreach events coming up.
Yeah, definitely. So that sounds good. Enhancing US 20 as a first Ocean View Gateway corridor. This is an area that you drive into. It's one of the areas that you first see. There's already some elements that are happening around here with your safe routes to schools and improving pedestrian and cycle safety. And then we've also talked about supporting the flex and industrial manufacturing in this area, the small scale kind of commercial industrial collaboration piece, and then how does that fit in with the residential areas? And then continuing to remove barriers to housing along US 20. So that's going to encompass things like evaluating rezoning, exploring partnerships, and then pursuing some development with a range of partners. Like Jim said, these opportunities specific to this area are really going to look a little different. The US 20 is maybe a little less so than US 101 with the couplet changes, but the opportunities here are going to change based on how we move forward.
Thanks, Nicole. And then,
can we talk about that profile back there? Sorry. Sure. I actually have quite a bit of opinions on Highway 20. On the east side of this section, I feel like the road gets a lot wider. And I'm wondering, is there opportunity to try to get like that protected bike lane as you move further to the east? I feel like at some point it becomes wide enough that as you approach what's the road that comes up from the bank?
Moore.
When Moore's coming up, so when you're at that like busy intersection, I feel like it'd be really nice as a cyclist to have a lane that gets a little bit of protection there as it moves forward.
As you move east?
As you move towards the east on a bike.
Where the light is.
East of Highway 20, are you talking about?
I think this is based on like the tightest profile, probably, which is further to the west, right?
Yeah.
And
right.
You get more right of way width, more actual paved surface the further east you go.
Yeah, Dustin, as when we went back and we were talking about this earlier, the reason why our transportation plan calls for cycling to be diverted at first to First Street at the Moore and 20 intersection is because as the event extend west on US 20, we have a fairly narrow street section. As you point out, as you go east out of town on US 20, you have a wider right of way. You can accommodate cycling on both sides of the highway, but you also have some pretty significant terrain challenges in spots.
Yeah, so you cut down.
Yeah.
I don't know, I ride on that road, so I have opinions on it.
Great soul.
That's different words than I was going to use. There is going to have to be some widening on the west end of that corridor to accommodate, hopefully someday, a second left turn lane from southbound 101 on to eastbound 20. And
yes.
So to land those two lanes of traffic, this front section over here is going to have to be widened. Somewhat.
Yeah, between Benton and 101 in that general area, yeah.
And then you got the merge problems with that, going back to one lane from two. Hopefully it will be smooth, but who knows.
Okay. Other thoughts before Jim keeps moving forward? Questions? Okay.
So you've seen this diagram before, and we've kind of been thinking about it, and I just wanted the red text kind of highlights the summary of what I think the consultant team is seeing, and the big difference, and I've said it a few times already, the couplets extra pedestrian space and the safety benefits, whether it's bike, pedestrian, or vehicular, the improvement to traffic flow, and how it works with on-street parking, you know, does stand out to us, the consultants, as, boy, when you're looking at, I have to pick one of these, I think the couplet gives you more benefits. So just wanted to say that. I think that's the quick summary. I think there's some development differences between the two, but I still think they're pretty similar. And Brandy, I don't know if you want to jump in, but you know, looking ahead, we're supposed to work with you guys to say, tell us which direction to go, and we need to figure out a good way to like do that. And we could take a vote today, or we could do something different.
We can also just work around the room and maybe get everyone's opinions, so that way every community member has an opportunity to say something.
Yeah, and it's not a final vote, right? I mean,
I think it's just, we just need to work together to figure this out.
Yeah.
On how to focus.
So I think it's more of a check-in, right? How are you feeling? Do you have concerns with one? Are you kind of like leaning more towards one or the other? So I think
revisit it after the engagement,
right?
Coming up
and we'll come back to you with the feedback from the public. So it's not like this is your final time to make a recommendation, but it could help the team just try to start to see, is there some, you know, kind of synthesis amongst you or agreement amongst you where you're kind of leaning towards one or the other. So it's more of a temperature check. Yeah, Melanie.
Just a quick question as far as like funding and how to pay for these things and all of our tax dollars and where ODOT comes in on this. you guys kind of touched last time on like the couplet being easier to get funding for. I guess I am curious how that really works, and I feel like that's a really important factor that goes into our decision making. Because
yeah, I'll touch on it a little bit.
What does
and,
it look like?
Yeah, I can touch on a little bit, and I'll let David Helton jump in if from the state's perspective if he has other comments, but. The funding to do any kind of improvement on 101, either alternative, we're talking about big dollars. I mean, when you keep in mind, Philomath just wrapped up an enhancement to an existing couplet there. That was an $18 million project. And it's not just, that's not $18 million of sidewalks. That's $18 million of completely rebuilding the street sections and utilities under the street sections, in addition to the curb, sidewalk, bike lanes, and lighting and landscaping and everything else goes with the project. So that's how you get to that kind of a number. Urban renewal, which we have some substantial resources, maybe a third of that cost would be covered by Newport Urban Renewal. The balance of that would likely come from state and federal sources. Those programs are typically tailored to promote multimodal activity, improving the state highway system so that it can best accommodate all modes of transportation. Passenger vehicles, freight, pedestrians, cyclists, transit. I mean, that's typically your basket of what you need to accommodate as best you can. The street section you get with the couplet tends to do that better. It scores better in terms of meeting all of those modes. You know, it's not perfect. There are things that need to, that you know you can adjust to improve upon it, but that one between the two would probably score better and be more competitive for the additional probably two-thirds of the funding you need to make this thing happen.
But Melanie, like, and Derek, correct me if I'm wrong, but to your point with taxes, the money is there. I had a discussion with someone about this.
Yeah.
And they're like, what a waste of money. And I was like, well, here's the question. Like, do you want that money in Newport, Oregon,
right,
or somewhere else? Because the money is being spent.
Whether you like it or not,
the money's there. So it's, you know, do you want it here or
that's
somewhere else?
No, I guess I'm like, where's the funding?
Right. Yeah. Big chunk of that's coming from state and federal sources, and that's competitive. And so you're competing with other communities that are trying to do projects too, and you want to position. You want to do a project that meets the community needs, but also in a manner in which it's very competitive for those funds that can actually do the project and make the improvements.
Yeah, any other clarifying questions? Again, it's just more of a temperature check. We'll be going out to the public and getting their input, and then we'll be coming back. Brett, looks like you have a question.
Yeah, it's more of a question just to throw out there. I've had some experience working with issues with couplets and deciding which way to go. And looking at the parking numbers that you have for both, how was the issue of service deliveries and delivery areas for businesses kind of thought? I know this is kind of getting in the weeds, but I guess I've seen it sometimes where when you necessitate parking for delivery vehicles, that can, you know, definitely impact your parking numbers. And two scenarios, there can be some differences in how that works. I don't know if that was looked at all.
Yeah, and if I might add, that same applies to transit. If you're going to have a transit stop, it's going to take up some parking that has
absolutely
to go away.
And your point is well taken. We haven't gotten down into the weeds yet, Brett, you know, to think about exactly where loading zones would or would not be. I think the side streets offer, you know, probably the best opportunity for that. We're still kind of high up, high level planning, just trying to wrap our head around the numbers. But when it moves towards more of the reality, those types of details will really matter.
And I would just add, in terms of transit specifically, you know, the agency picked up that property that used to be the gas station there. And one of the thoughts there was that gives us some flexibility to shift around where the bus stop is located at the end of the day. Because not only talking about that little funky triangular shaped piece of property that was the gas station, but by acquiring that puts in play the adjacent road rights of way, which don't make a lot of sense right now and can be reconfigured in a way that works a lot better. And those rights of way are frankly bigger than the gas station property. And so you've got some play there for what's that look like in the future to best meet the community needs, and you know, is transit, you know, where can transit be in a manner that best meets the community needs?
Yeah, Bob.
I think it's probably premature to take a vote, even a preliminary vote. I'd really like to hear what the public's got to say.
I can.
A much broader sample, I hope, of the actual local population. I know that people that live on 9th or have businesses on 9th are going to have very strong opinions one way or the other.
Sure.
And I'd like to see all that before, because I'm really ambivalent. I can see them. Both sides, they are.
Yeah, and to Bob's point, which I agree with, I think the better question here is, are these materials coming together in a manner in which the public can understand what the two options are and provide meaningful feedback?
I tell you what they're going to say.
What the,
they're going to ask, why is it, why make the couplet so short, and why not just go to the hospital? That's what
they're definitely going to ask. That
that's
yeah,
going to be a huge. To me, that's the logical.
Yeah.
You know, that just makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense
to me, and it's a big reason why I don't like the short couplet, but a longer couplet, I'm actually pretty down for.
They're
so,
going to need the reason.
And I don't
why
think the hospital should choose. But they, I mean, that's just my personal
okay.
opinion.
That's a great point.
Because they'll get caught up in that.
That's where you turn to go off
yeah.
the bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we asked that same question at Newport City Council, and I believe the answer was that Urban Renewal Agency funds are supposed to be used for areas that have not been improved. Well, the hospital has improved their area, so if I remember correctly, Derek said that made the total 9th Street not an option. Am I not remembering that correctly, Derek, or misunderstood it?
No, I think, I mean, that's, no, you have part of it. I mean, when we went through the transportation system planning process, there were three alternatives that were evaluated. There was the, and the one that fell off was the long couplet, TSP, and you know, one of the big issues there was that you have, you know, a hospital campus that's developing on both sides of 9th Street. And we've seen that significant investment from the hospital up to this point. They're continuing to acquire property down there, and you can expect that that's going to continue to expand with some expected, a lot of pedestrian movement between the two sides. So the issue was, what kind of benefit do you get by making major investments to extend a couple of that far south in terms of new economic development, and it just didn't pencil. And the additional cost was substantial based on what you would likely get in terms of redevelopment opportunities.
There are quite a few properties on that south end, though,
mm-hmm.
that could be redeveloped, that are probably in need of redevelopment. Like in front of Sandpit, there's just, you know, older buildings there that could be fixed as a part of, like, right where the couplet
mm-hmm.
takes off. And then maybe this is a question for the transportation engineers, but what is the additional cost? Because the hospital already improved the sidewalk along 9th, is it really that much of an economic
lift?
They
did our job for us. I mean,
and maybe the profiles can shift too, right? We don't have a verge where there's a planting strip in that section, but still traffic's flowing that way. And then as you get closer, then suddenly the sidewalk will split off where the couplet is, and then you get the planting strip and the protected bike lane. But maybe there's like a, you know, and this is, again, into further design, but if traffic's going that way, the road has already been improved. It seems to make sense to put it there.
Somewhere else.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, I think, too, I agree that just peeling off at 9th Street would be the most natural way for the traffic to flow, but as Derek said, it was kind of taken out as an option.
And I can pull up the information when we went through the TSU consultants have that, so that we have that information there, so that folks that are asking about, well, what about, why wasn't this extended all the way down here? We can actually have that on maybe a board or something where they say, hey, this was looked at very carefully in 2022, and these are the reasons why it wasn't selected.
Can the TSP be amended?
Of course,
can be amended. It can be considered, though, right, in theory?
Basically what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Is it on the table?
So it can be reconsidered? I couldn't quite hear everything.
I think so. Yeah.
Technically, yes.
I would be for reconsideration if we could do that.
And I think it'd be interesting to look at like the economic cost, because maybe it doesn't make sense to put all the money into something that was just replaced, right? The bike lane. Like maybe you just don't pay that extra money, and that way it makes it more economical for that section to have be, northbound only.
Okay.
One other thing I would mention that's very different along that section, and that was part of the consideration too, I didn't mention it, but as you know, your form of development changes once you clear Alder. You have a wider US 101 right away, and that's where you start to see more development a little bit further away from the curb line of the highway. That's another consideration in that factor. I mean, it wouldn't be. If it was a long couplet, your form would not look the same. Because when you come in at, Pig and Pancake, and you got about that 5 or 6 blocks, you've got a 74-foot right-of-way, and you've got buildings built tight to the curb, and they don't have room to push back. When you go south and north, frankly, it opens up, and you get more of a highway-oriented commercial where buildings are set back further. You've got parking lots in front of them in many cases. So it's just a very different look and feel.
I think new development, like where the hotel is, right, mm-hmm. or that area develops, yeah. so they could push closer to it. I think, like, when we did the Center for Health Education, we petitioned ODOT out of there right away so we could get the building closed for that reason. So mm-hmm. I think if people know that they own pieces of property on US 101 mm-hmm. and then they redevelop it, they will push tighter. And the hospital will always open up, but.
Okay.
Folks are having a hard time hearing. Is that? Did I see a note about that? Or
so I'll just rephrase. I think so what I heard was that there is some interest amongst the committee to look at the potential for extending the couplet, understanding why it wasn't extended and why that wasn't selected in the TSP, why the short couplet moved forward. And so there were questions about could the TSP be amended? So it sounds like we're going to need to follow up.
Brandy, could we ask, though, is that a consensus among the committee? If the, we're still not fixing a certain item, but if it is a couplet, would you want it to be one couplet? Does everyone agree with that?
I'd like to hear from Ralph.
Yeah, and I think if we're not going to vote or like anything about all the options, I would be hesitant. But I like where you're going, Dustin, because I think we need to get more information, and then I think that's what I'm hearing from the group is like, let's get some more information from the community, from the technical team, and then we can bring it back. So like, let's put a pause on that maybe until the next meeting when we have a little bit more answers to your questions. And I do see Ralphie went off mute. Did you want to say something? Maybe you didn't. Okay. We can't hear you anyways. Okay, so I do want to be respectful of your time, and we do have some people. I'm not sure if you all want to comment, but I just wanted to briefly move on to the public involvement, the first phase that we're going to be doing. So if you picked up the documents, there's an event plan over on this table. And so we wanted to just briefly touch on this with you about what we're planning to do. So this is a document that we produced when we were trying to consider how to develop an event. And so as you kind of scan through this document, you'll see that we have the purpose of the event. So what we're planning on doing is holding a workshop where people can drop in anytime between 4 and 7 p.m. And people online, let me know if you can't hear me. Just do the cupped ear thing so I can speak louder into the mic. But so basically we wanted to get input from the community around these same questions that we've been speaking with you over this meeting and the last meeting, where we talked about those opportunities and those barriers that we are looking at as we move forward with this plan. And so we want to make it interactive. We want people to feel like they can give us their input as well as get some of this information and help them feel educated, just as we've kind of walked you all through this process. So on page 2, we start to list invitees or stakeholders for people that we want to make sure we connect with. Just some like logistical things.
I just got an email saying it looks like folks online lost the audio.
Maybe that was older. David, can you hear us online? Or Nicole?
Nope.
Can't hear them.
Nicole or someone, can you hear us?
Does it look like
no. No?
Yeah, no.
Folks online,
I love Zoom.
Can't hear the audio.
Oh, no.
Okay. No, that's okay, Sherry. Technology is beautiful and wonderful, but also horrible. So we will just, I'll just let you try to troubleshoot it, and I'll just continue for this group, and then we can get the summary together for everyone. But we're going to be doing extensive outreach. You can see what we're looking at for on page 4, including, so you can ignore the comment form. We changed some of the dates, so I apologize for that. We're going to be sending you all an email. So this is a preview of the email that you will get. But basically, we are going to be hosting the workshop on Thursday, November 14th from 4 to 7 at the Center for Health Education. So we figured that's right in the project area or right outside of the project area. And people can drop in anytime between 4 and 7. We will also be sending out information in the utility bills. I believe that Derek is getting ready to stuff those. so that'll go out.
Going out next week.
Okay, coming out next week. So look for that flyer that's over there. And then we'll be posting on the website and social media, as well as a postcard that will be sent out to all people in the city. And then also, you'll see on page 6, a kind of a rough meeting format for what the workshop will look like. And so basically, we want to have some display boards that explain this information. And then we will be doing a presentation about 5:15, and then walking people through, and then people can go to some maps and draw on maps, give us their comments, we'll walk them through all of this information. You'll also notice that we'll be having an online open house. The draft content starts on page 7, and you'll see that we're trying to explain why we're doing this project. We will have information about the different alternatives, as well as lots of images and maps, those of which you saw today. We'll be using those images. And then we will be having some questions to try to simplify in an online format, right? We have to deal with technical issues and the fact that people may or may not be familiar with this project. And so we're trying to make the questions as multiple choice instead of kind of like open-ended, so that hopefully it will be easier and make sense to people. It will also help us analyze our information as we get it back. And so you can see the list of survey questions. It starts on page 9. But the first question is like, what improvements and changes would you like to see in the project area? And so then we have a list of 12 potential multiple choice options. And so we are thinking that people could check all that apply. So I'm wondering, these are the same for, so that first question. And then we would further ask to people to choose which are most important, either in a ranked scale by saying, like, this is very important to not at all important, or by having people select their top three. So we want to try to force people down. You know, the first is like, choose all of the above, the important, and then we want to try to narrow it down. And then hopefully that will help you all as we come back to you to say, like, actually people told us they were most concerned about parking, or they were most concerned about safety, or whatever it is, and then that information will hopefully help you all. I'm going to give you I just have a little bit. We also wanted to check about what could redevelopment of this area mean for Newport. And again, we give some options. And then what are some barriers that we're facing? And then, of course, we always ask if there's anything else we should know. So we always have an open-ended option for people. And then we do ask for some demographic information so that we can hopefully, if needed, try to split the information so that we can say, okay, for people who live inside Newport, here's kind of what they said versus people who might be visitors. Sometimes we see a difference of opinions, right? Sometimes we see a difference of opinions maybe on like what their primary mode of transportation is. Right, people who drive versus people who bike might see these improvements or ideas very differently. And so we want to be able to sort the information as needed. So the only required question in the whole survey is, what is your home zip code? And again, that's so that we can try to see, you know, are we seeing differences for people who live in Newport versus people who don't live in Newport? That's a lot really quickly, but I want to give you a little bit of time. Is there any questions? And you can always email me. We're going to hopefully get started building the online open house next week. So we'd like some comments in the next couple of days, maybe by Wednesday. Yeah, Wayne.
If you need some help marketing this, reach out to the chamber so we can put you in front of local businesses. And we also have a new digital sign up front for that the community can see.
Oh, great.
And so let us know and what we can do to support, and that way we can get some more information out, hopefully increase your attendance.
Yeah, great. And I forgot to mention in my rapid fire speech here, but we are also going to be doing two focus groups, one in English and one in Spanish at the library on Friday, the 15th. So we're going to be here on Thursday night, and then we'll be here Friday. And so we'll be reaching out to Spanish speakers in the community. We've already spoken to the Latina liaison with the city and the library. And so we'll be at the library. They're going to help promote it. So yeah, it would be great. And the survey will be, and online open house will also be in Spanish. So so we'll have it in English and Spanish. And then we'll be also reaching out to social service providers and organizations that maybe represent lower income people or houseless people. And so some of those voices that we don't always hear, so we're going to be inviting them to one of the focus groups as well. And then,
Should there be a focus group for strictly for business owners in the project area, particularly along 101 and 9th?
It's a good question. I think we can talk more about it. I know we'll be here because, like, my dad lives in Wellport, so I'll be staying with him that night. So I know we'll be in town and we'll be, you know, here talking to people. So I think we might be able to squeeze
those
in.
Those people would have the most to win or lose, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I had one question with regard to your information, not my time.
Okay. Let me check. Anybody else have questions? Okay, go ahead. Go for it.
I don't pay my bills by mail. It's automatically deducted, so I don't get any sending things out in the mail that is useless now to most people that pay bills. Like that. Well, however, what I did have a question on your postcards. What was the range you're going to send it out to?
Carrier route. We're going to do a carrier route drop throughout the city.
Welcome to Zoom.
So carrier route, which kind of...
So it's a mail carrier route. So it's basically anyone within the city of Newport. So everybody. So you know those really annoying things, not this one, but other annoying things that you don't want to read. You know, you maybe get in the mail. It's the cheapest way to mail, and it goes to every single building.
Yes,
that was actually part of our consideration of the date for the event. Yes, we didn't want our mailing to get lost in the midst of all those mailings. So, yeah.
Brandy, do we need to move into public comment here?
Yeah.
We may have the sound back.
Okay. Do we have sound?
Yeah, make sure we...
I'm not sure if we...
There it is.
Okay.
Hi, David. Do you hear us?
David, can you hear us? No.
He signed off.
Okay. Well, I don't think we have any public comments on the, online. But do any of you want to say anything? Yeah. So let me get my computer here so I can take some notes about what you have to say. So we typically do. Just 2 minutes. So if you could say your name and then just go ahead and speak.
Yeah, my name is Marcus Limbrunner, and I'm coming into this a bit cold and looking at some of these plans for the first time. And it becomes pretty obvious to me as if we have a business in this location that's not currently operating, but it is a restaurant and bar. Probably familiar with the old Moby Dick's. That's the property I'm talking about. And thinking about what options make the most sense for a restaurant or bar, certainly parking would be nice, and having the option, it seems like a stretch now, but for the redesign that we have planned, I could see a possibility of having some sort of option for a valet parking to be able to access the parking lot and back, as well as an additional parking lot that we have in the general area that could be readily accessible within a block or so. That would allow, because the first question that people have is, well, what are you going to do about parking? Because it's already parking constrained for us there. And having the option for someone to be able to pull up and be able to drop their car off and have it parked in the back parking lot or at another auxiliary parking lot that we own nearby would be a huge advantage considering what we would hope to be the kind of volume of people that we would expect with the redesign that we have planned. And without having that option for someone to even stop there and park on the road or it would be a real hindrance to not have that option. The other business that's right there as well that I'm thinking of that's doing a pretty good job with some foot traffic and other people coming from out of town is that record shop. And I know that my brother-in-law, every time he comes to town, he goes to that record shop and he parks right there on 101. And I know that the owner of the record shop parks right there. And I think taking away that parking would be a real disadvantage to those businesses. In addition, from what I understand, the bicyclists would be routed along the other portion of the couplet away from that downtown area. And I think that would make most sense for everybody as far as safety and practicality for advantages, for a win-win for parking and for bicyclist safety. Am I understanding that correctly, that the couplet plan would allow bicyclists to use the other 9th Street? Instead
I think
of,
both options have...
Or would there be room for bicyclists even with the couplet?
So there's a big difference between the highway 101 two-way option versus the couplet option. And the difference when it comes to bikes and parking is on the Highway 101 option, where it still remains two-way, all the on-street parking goes away. Mm-hmm. And the bike lanes move to 9th, where all the on-street parking on 9th goes away. So that's the two-way 101 option on the couplet option, on-street parking on 101 stays.
Mm-hmm.
On-street parking on 9th goes away, but one bike lane heading south on 101 and one bike lane heading north on 9th.
Okay, so each respective direction gets their own bike. Okay, that would make sense. That's easily to me the obvious option.
You can petition for a loading zone too for your
in addition to having drop offs. We have an alley back there, but who knows how tight that is or how convenient it is, depending on who's delivering what and any kind of. I mean, it was certainly having it for deliveries for the option of LA everything.
Yeah.
Having a one way bike thing that obviously would be much safer than a two way. So, I mean, that to me is someone that has a business that's not even currently operating there, but in the future expecting that. And no one business is going to make or break, you know, that zone. But I really expect once our business is fully operational, that it'll have a dramatic impact for the neighborhood and the city that's going to be nothing but a benefit.
I love it. I'm excited. Moby Dix is coming back. Are you going to keep the name?
It will not be Moby Dix. Yeah, a little too much of a dive. We have a much more sophisticated plan for it, and hopefully it's. We have no interest in running a restaurant or bar ourselves, but we're going to get into a reconditioned state that someone that has that expertise is going to want to go in there and operate a restaurant and a bar. That's going to be a place that hopefully the community is excited to see.
That's great. Thank you. Did either of you want to speak?
Well, I would just say I'm Lou Lindmer, one of the owners of properties up in that area, that if you take parking away on 101, you're kind of cutting the heads off of the businesses that are along there, and that it still would be safe and everything the way it is. But if you want to expand the sidewalks, I don't think that's a great idea because it wouldn't hurt us, but it's not going to be a busy place like 42nd Avenue or something, and we're never going to have the bike traffic that they have in Amsterdam or Copenhagen. And a lot of the dedicated bikers here even dedicate biking in the winter, but not many. So I think it's safety is the main concern, and that the couplet is probably the best way to do that and have enough money on the table to cover all these expenses. That would be the way to go. I would see it myself, just as a personal view.
Okay, great. Did you want to say something? Or, yeah.
Just a thing to throw out. Parking seems to be like a huge thing. Of course it is. Maybe explore public transportation. When we have seafood and wine festival here, we designate hubs for people to park, and then we take shuttles in and drop them off, and we have like a 15-minute rotation. It's feasible to think about having a place for visitors or, you know, people that live here to park and have a 15-minute or, you know, a very regular shuttle that would take you into the main parts of the town. You could go down to the Bayfront, Nye Beach, and the center of Newport, and that maybe, you know, that would be a helpful option to reduce the parking problem. Yeah.
Wonderful. Any other comments? Yeah.
There was one thing here, and I can't find the
page. I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Oh, Jeff Fertilite. You're showing the rents of like $15. Was that per year? Per square foot?
I'm pretty sure it's per square foot.
Is that per year?
Well,
we're only getting $1.50 now.
I was going to say it has to be.
It may be Portland prices, but it's not Newport.
Okay, great. Thanks for that clarification.
Clarify that. Because when this developer is going to look at that and say, well, wait a minute, I can't even afford to build a building that costs $300 a square foot to build. And then I think then also look to your parking estimates here of losing 63 spaces by couplet and two-way. You can buy for $300,000. You can buy 63 spaces. Why spend $12 million?
Okay.
My point. Just buy the damn parking. You don't provide it for free. For everybody else has to pay for it, but you're gonna give it away for free. That's fine.
Okay. Great. Okay. Well, I think our last agenda item is just next step.
So Dustin, do you want to cover that?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, our next step is our meeting on December 13th from 2 to 4. So thank you everyone for coming, for your time. One last comment I guess I have for the actual presentation material.
Yeah.
I think we need to be really careful. You know, we've all gone through three meetings of this and have like some rudimentary understanding of traffic planning, and it's just a complex process, and I feel like it's really hard. Maybe there's a couple of boards right at the start that just explain like real simple things, you know, pros and cons. I think as much as we can simplify this, and then trying to touch on the funding strategy too. Like, it is probably a crass way to describe it, but it's sort of like a cookie jar. And the question is like, do you want a cookie or not? Because it's not about a waste of government money.
Email me because they're not going to get it back up. So,
we can do that.
Okay.
You know, the money is there. And so it's not about waste of money. It's not about waste of like government money. Do you want money any quarter?
And with that, yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. And I would say for anybody else who wants to give me any other ideas, stick around. And because I think the more we can make it clear and help the community understand, the better, right? We all want it. Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Thank you all. And we'll see you hopefully on November 14th. Otherwise, December 13th. All right, thank you.